Ladies and gentlemen, ahead of the show that's the 6th of October at EBGB's, which is going to feel like something of a hometown, homecoming show, a christening, a baptism, or whatever the fuck you want to say. Of course, today I'm sitting down with Dylan, Elliot, and Joe from the Devil's Henchmen. Lads, welcome to the show.
Ah, thanks for
Thank
having
you.
us.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a long time coming, this really, because there's been a couple of sort of near misses where we've got to get Joe on the show, tried to get Dylan and Elliot maybe at some point as well, because the projects that they're involved in. So it's nice to all tie you down to this kind of to the show and have a bit of a gab ahead of it. Is it's going to be a special one this Friday, the sixth is going to be a special one, isn't it?
Oh, definitely
Is
very
indeed.
special one for us.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is like when a band goes off and is successful and comes back as another band now, as the best version of that band, and they come back with all the stuff they've learned and they go, "Thank you, Liverpool. This is what we are now." And that's what this show feels like. I don't know if you feel that, but that's what it will be.
100%. I think we've been building up to a show. Like, this is our biggest headline show yet, and it's in support of our debut album, which is like what we've been building up to for years and working so like hard on behind the scenes over like the last couple of years. And yeah, it's just gonna be a boss night, and I feel like it's I just can't wait for
It
it.
does. It's just like I say, it's a chance for us as in the Liverpool scene to kind of say thanks by this will fucking sell out this show. Have you did, I can't, like you don't know, but have you seen the fucking bill? It's like it's Hogan who are fucking, you know what I mean? They're smashing at the moment as well. You know, Reclaim, fucking Liam and the boys, just they're amazing too. Junta also amazing. It's like fucking hell, you must be like, fuck, I'd go to this show.
Yeah, well, that's what we wanted to do when we were picking who to pull. We just wanted to pick bands that we thought were solid bands, and also bands that like we've really got along with. You know, we've seen them all live. We've got to know like everyone in these bands, and they're all like really great people, really great bands. And it's just like the vibe already from like just sorting things out for the show is just like brilliant. Like it's just gonna be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the things that I witnessed at the many shows that I go to, something that a lot of scenes maybe don't have, is that all three of the members that I'm talking to today, I've seen independently at shows they are not playing. So they're not on the bill. Yeah, there's not like it's not a massive headline band. It's a local support, a local band show, and they have been there supporting that. That carries an awful lot of weight that I see. You know, being able to go to other band shows that you're not playing, you not have any contact with other than, you know, as a fan. And I think you're going to see a lot of people in the audience on that show, which will be like that. They were just happy that you've succeeded and you kind of made it through. We'll talk about Bloodstock in a bit, but that you've made it through, that you've kind of gone to the next level and then approaching the next level after that, the next level after that. And they're just want to share that support for you. I think you're going to see that on that show most definitely.
Yeah, I guess we're just very into the scene. I mean, we say what we mean. We don't want to be hypocrites about anything. We love the scene we've got here. There's so many good bands. It was like mental. We could only pick three for this show as well that we're doing. But no, we all love gigs. We all love live music, and whenever we can, we try and get down and just check bands out and see bands again, see our mates and make new friends at shows.
Yeah, it's and like Dylan, I've said this to Dylan at the show as well. Like, thanks for fucking just watching bands that you're not in or involved with. I've said that to him, and it's like Elliot sounds like it sounds like he's saying something that's completely normal, and it's like, well, why the fuck wouldn't you do that? Elliot's like, well, that's what happens, right? No, it doesn't, ladies and gentlemen. Some bands pack up their shit mid-set of someone else's band and are taking stuff off. I've seen it happen, fucking tons of times. And
So
it just seems extraordinary that goes on. But Elliot's like, well, why wouldn't you go and see a band if you love that music? Why wouldn't you do that?
I
But
mean, I think we have the privilege of playing with great bands, you know, like there's loads of good bands in Liverpool. Why wouldn't you want to stick around, watch them, show your support? I mean, sure, you've played the gig, but like you're also there to watch a gig. You know, you get a free gig. I'm not going to leave. I'm getting my money's worth. Not that I pay for a ticket, like, but eating butter. I want to see some good bands.
Dylan's basically saying that that we might be all very, very tight. And to get our money's worth, that's the only reason. Like, God bless him, he's probably like, no.
Money's tight these days, you know, the economic crisis and all that.
Yeah, it's like I normally start at the very beginning and the first music that you listen to, but I want to be slightly different. What I want to do is I want to talk about the road just before we get to here. So for me, it was like this Metal to the Masses. The whole competition for me was both amazing and horrible at the same time, because I was the guy that would say who'd won each section. And all of the bands were my friends. And it was like, I'd say, told them, I'm just a comp here. I just said, you know, the Devil's Hands were where everybody goes, yeah, it's crazy. And that was amazing. And out of the corner of my eye, I have to get eye contact with all the bands that I've just now sold aren't going to Bloodstock. Fucking hell, that was tough. But as I said to those bands later on, I was like, you kind of want it. You don't want it to be there's only one band throughout the competition who's obviously going to win it, because that doesn't show that there's a quality of scene. Also, you've won. What the fuck have you won? You know, if all the bands were shit, you know, and you won, it's there's no real, you know, you're all kind of like raising each other's chips. You know what I mean? You're kind of challenging each other to be better. For example, at that show, you know, the Walls of Death, we're doing fucking Walls of Death in a club that's fucking 300 cap. It was fucking ridiculous.
It was, yeah. And as you said about the quality of the bands and the competition, like there was, you know, we never went into this cocky bastards thinking, ah, oh, we'll just go and win this. Like, we know we fully appreciate and love the quality and love the opportunity to play. And I guess compete isn't really the word I want to use. Alongside the fantastic bands that we have in the scene here.
It's a weird one, isn't it? I've tried to kind of shy away when I've done previews for the heats to say the words like compete and to say the words like battle of the bands, because it isn't. It just isn't. You know, none of the bands really see it that way, I don't think. It's the wrong way to see it, because, and it's a shout out to the lads in Hogan here, is that they were just like, okay, you know, our friends have got through them and are playing Bloodstock. Good for them. We'll go and see them, which they did. We'll go and see them play. They're supporting you on this show on Friday. And it's like, that's how it fucking should be, right? There shouldn't be animosity and like, well, if you win, I can't win, or any of that childish bullshit. There shouldn't be any of that. It should be, look, my friends fucking got on and away they've gone. And that's what, you know, I don't think in all the scenes that have gone in metal from the Bay Area to Seattle to all these things and the new wave British heavy metal, they were just happy that bands got through and happy that bands got to be heard and got to be successful. And I think that's the real key to A, the Metal to the Masters competition and events, and the scene as well, whichever city you're from, is that that's how it has to be, because not all the bands can get through. So what happens then? You just start all fighting because you didn't get through. Ridiculous, right?
Yeah, I mean, of course. Since we've done that whole Metal to the Masters thing as well, now you were saying, like, is it painful having to look them other bands in the eye like you're friends with?
Yeah.
But since that, you know, our first heat, Black Kettle, Spitfire, the lads in Black Kettle have became, like, really good mates to us. And we were at the gig on last weekend where it was Spitfire and Black Kettle, and we went to go and watch that. And I know, like, everyone at Spitfire and Black Kettle have come to our shows since. And we've played with Indigo Horizon, Absalom since them Metal to the Masters gigs, and we all get along really well. And it was a bit horrible on them nights when it was like, oh, we're going through, and it's like, obviously we're made off that we're going through, but then having to like turn around to people who we became friends with and be like, oh, well, you didn't. It was a bit of a bittersweet thing, kind of.
Yeah, but it's I had a conversation with a particular member from one of those bands that we're talking about, and they were like, look, you know, they won, they got through, we're really happy for them, we're going to support them, we're going to go and see them at Bloodstock and all the rest of it, and we're just going to go back and be better and try again next year, and that's the end of it. And that was like, what a fucking great way of seeing it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we're going to go again, we'll go again next year, and that's the way it's going to be. That was it. And I was like, that's fucking how it should be. I mean, those shows that you played, those heats, you don't see this because you're in the band, But I got to see you kind of really mature over quite a short period of time and get to really get to grips with the chance that it was only after I did the first heat when you won. And I was like, I think it's kind of gone to realization for them that they may go to Bloodstock here. I think that was it. And not that you didn't like absolutely hammer it the first time, but that show where it was the last one, it was the final and all the rest of it, there was a very serious moment, I think, that passed over the band where it was like, we could go to Bloodstock here. And I think anybody that was at that show could have seen that you left that all on stage, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we always try to bring what we do and present it in the truest way that we can, you know, live. Yeah. Like that first show, that first heat, I think it shocked us all a bit. We came off stage like on a massive high. Yeah. Like not even before anything was announced that we'd won or anything. That crowd was insane. It's one of the best gigs we've ever played. That heat won. Like yeah. It was ridiculous. Being on that stage felt completely different to any other gig we'd played before. Like it's hard to explain, but there was a feeling there. Like I know that everyone else in the band felt it as well. And then like to be announced that we won felt amazing. But the real takeaway from that night for me was the playing the show itself and like the crowd, because that was like, to me, that's the best part of that heat was that gig, because it still stands as like probably the best gig I've ever played. Well, like, you know, in terms of the crowd and everything, it was insane.
Yeah.
Like, it really motivated us.
Yeah. It's like, ladies and gentlemen, when you're in a band and you're playing endless shows and a lot of shows, you get to a point where you are a well-oiled machine. You can play the set and you can play it really well. And that's expected and that's as it should be. But then every so often, shows come along where, yes, you're going to be the well-oiled machine, but the other part of the gig being successful is almost out of your hands, because it's the audience. It's almost, obviously it's your job to entertain them and to instruct them and kind of get them, pull them in and the rest of it. But if they don't turn to you, if they don't bring you in, if they're not susceptible for whatever reason, no matter how good you are, it can sometimes be impossible. And at that show, I think the crowd realized how important things were. Because they were like, one man's going to play Bloodstock, which in and of itself is incredibly important. But also, we are seeing the birth of a scene. That we are seeing the beginnings of a scene here. We're seeing the absolute best from this area playing. I mean, you couldn't put a credit card in between the bands. They were absolutely superb, all of them. And I think the audience realised that. They're like, oh, shit, we can really celebrate this. And it was like, I think it wasn't, and if I'm completely honest, ladies and gentlemen, as I always try and be, I think the first couple of songs of each band, there was a little bit where it was like, what are we doing? And then the fucking crowd just went nuts for the back end of most of the people's sets. They were almost like, what, did the last band were fucking incredible? This band are incredible? And the next band are incredible? Normally it's like, okay, well, it's only one good band really worth doing anything on the bill. I think they were almost shocked. And the videos that came off that I got sent by people were just fucking ridiculous. Were just ridiculous. You know, people, you know, wall of deaths and pits and stuff in a very small club. But, and I raised this to you, how long did it take for the realization to sit in when you'd finished that show, when you were elated that you'd won and going to the final, that you realized then that you actually are going to Bloodstock? What's that like?
I mean, that probably kicked in for me maybe a week after we played at Bloodstock. It didn't feel like any of it was really real going through the whole thing. It was just a brilliant time. But no, it felt pretty surreal knowing that we were going to a festival of that size and we were playing, and like it felt like a bit of an achievement as well, which is it was just great.
It felt weird for us as well, because it was like we've been given this gift by the scene. We have a job to do.
Oh, mate.
It's not really
100%.
Like, it's not like, we get to go and play Bloodstock. It's like, we now need to go prove ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it felt like,
mate,
sent to do a job.
I've been doing this show, I don't know, we're nearly up to 100 and something, 200 episodes, whatever the fuck it is. And I've been trying to, sort of explain what the scene is and try and figure it out and intellectualize it in all these ways. And Dylan's just solved that. I would have just brought Dylan on the very first show. He says that, and then I would have closed the whole thing fucking down. We were given a gift, ladies and gentlemen, by the scene. That is a beautiful way of seeing it. And with that, I'm sure you're aware, becomes then that responsibility, because now you're, this is a band from the Northwest. Okay, I'm going to check them out because apparently there's a fucking scene there. I'm going to go and check them out. And now you have to deliver with a different audience now that are, you know, they're open. If you're good, you know, two or three songs in, they're good. The Bloodstock crowd will adopt you if you're good. But you still have to prove yourself. You still, you know, most people never even heard you, not even a song, not seen you, not didn't know anything about. So when the realization sits in and you kind of go, okay, we're playing Bloodstock, what did you do to the sets? Did you mess around with it? What did you do from the mindset? What did anything change? Was it just we're just gonna play that again, but absolutely level it? Or what was the mindset then when you go, okay, we're gonna do a set for Bloodstock?
I guess in terms of the song choices, I think we played the same set again from the final, didn't we?
Yeah,
because I think pretty much the same one. Yeah,
I think so.
It was just a strong set. I think like we had messed around with set lists and stuff, and for that final, you know, it got such a good reaction and all them points. It that set just felt really comfortable and solid. Yeah. So we were like, let's just take this to the final, and I think there was a guy announcing before on stage, and he said, "This is the Merseyside Metal to the Masters winners, Devil's Henchman." And you know, we were going there, we had like a job to do. We're like sort of holding down the fort for our scene in Merseyside. And that was important to us. And next year, it's going to be another solid band doing that. And but going into it, we basically said two things. Let's go and do what we put into every single gig, which is our 100% effort. Let's just smash the shit out of it like we always try and do. And secondly, let's just enjoy it, because it's such a massive thing for us. Let's just go and have some fun and just go and do what we always do and just do our thing. You know, do our thing got us to that point. Let's just keep doing that.
Yeah, playing the same set isn't a negative. You know what I mean? It's like, it means that you've got, okay, well, we know the music works now. We know the music works. We know the order works. We know what's going on. Because then you can fully kind of approach, like we're saying about that sort of 20-odd% of which is the crowd. You can say, okay, well, now we have to engage this crowd. We know the stuff. We know what's going on. Everybody knows the roles and what they're going to be doing, where they're going to be doing it. Let's start engaging with the crowd. So, I mean, I've seen the videos. There was a great crowd for you there. It was a really good crowd, wasn't it?
I mean,
surreal.
we had got there the day before because we were camping for the full thing, and we printed off like 1,000 flyers. So like New Blood stage, 3 PM, and like this like big design thing, and we went around literally everybody we could and gave out nearly every single flyer that we had to everyone and just chatted and just like met as many people and had a chat with them. And we got on stage on that Friday, and the tent was like absolutely rammed, and we played our intro, and just before we went into our latest single Grimace, which we played like was the first song of the set, I went, "Bloodstock, open this fucking place up," and straight away the pit just opened and I was like, this is gonna be fun.
It's like, every band always talks about it. We're in this to the next level. We're going to do that to the next level. But it's hard to sometimes pinpoint what that exactly means. And what it exactly means, ladies and gentlemen, is where all the work that you've done at a local level suddenly becomes a national level, where you get to say that. Like, you know, Joe, when you were a kid, you know, did you think you'd ever be screaming to an audience, you know, at Bloodstock, "Open this fucking pit up"? Like, you know, it still must have been mind-blowing to even do that. And you have that. I bet those first three songs went fucking right by. Like, done. God, I mean, the whole set probably did, but those first couple of songs just went away, right by. Because your adrenaline's up. And that's the wonderful thing about it. But, so you touched about something again. We talked about this before off pod, Joe, that the work you put in before you even played, you know, going there, you're there a day early, you're taking flyers and you're giving them out. And I talk to bands all the time that go through and play Bloodstock about this is still work to be done. There's still a job to be done and effort to be made. This isn't the top of the mountain. It's the top of a series of mountains. And, you know, you've got to go, and you've still got to be a professional on and off the stage and engage with everything from the back crew, and work with them correctly and learn how to do that, and the crowd, and start to talk to people and kind of, you know, not just rock up 10 minutes before, give the sound guys and the crew a load of shit, and then get drunk for the rest of the festival. It's not about that, sadly. I wish you know, getting drunk for the rest of the festival was. It is when you're there a punter. But when you're playing, especially on the day you're playing, you've got to put the work in, right?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, from when we got there on the Thursday, it was like, you know, get tents up, get everything sorted. And then it was a case of, okay, now like the job side of this starts. We need to go around and we need to talk to as many people as we can, and we need to like be salesmen the whole time. Yeah. And just prove ourselves to people to then get the chance for them to come and see us try and prove ourselves. But yeah, we tried not to waste any opportunity that was even slightly given to us the whole time, talking to everyone, whether it was the people like on merch that were selling our t-shirts, you know, always trying to make a positive impression, always talking to the people behind the stage, you know, like Elliot knew the guy who was running the drum tech for our stage, and we were talking to the guitar techs, just trying to like push as much of a positive image as we could onto literally everyone who we came in contact with, because it wasn't just we get to play Bloodstock, it was we get to be backstage and make an impression on all those people. You don't want to waste that and just go get bladdered, you know, as much as we would have liked to.
Yeah, well, and as soon as we finished, you know, we went over to like the press section, and we stayed in that press section until everyone finished for the day. And then went and enjoyed this. You know, we didn't want to miss a single opportunity. We're getting an interview, getting on any of these things. And we just 100% just tried to make the absolute most of it the whole time.
Yeah.
And then we did get bladders and enjoy ourselves.
Yeah. That's okay too. That's what the after parties are for. And I remember the first time going to being in the press area in Bloodstock, and isn't it a weird old thing? It's all these little tiny wick like picket fences. They're not even waist high. They're like kind of knee high, aren't they? Yeah. And it's like a child's like playground almost, and that's the thing that separates the in between everybody else and the kind of the press section. And it's just this weird little world where there's like a procession of people. You go from one person to the other doing your press, and there's people sitting down doing interviews, and you can see people fooling around and all that, and then suddenly snapping into interview mode and things like that. It's such a weird and wonderful little world. But I think it's interesting what you're saying about, you know, professionality, because ladies and gentlemen, there are lots and lots of fantastic and great bands out there. And sometimes the difference between you getting booked for a big festival and tours and supports for tours almost all the time is, are you nice people to work with? Your band should be fucking good. That's almost a given. Your band should be good. But you've got to be, you know, if you get booked for a tour, you may be on the same tour bus as a larger band. If you're a dickhead or difficult to work with, they're not going to ask you back. You might not even make the end of the tour. If you're playing a festival and you're horrible to the crew, I am here to tell you the crew will remember you. You know what I mean? And or even worse, they'll go, look, you know, we can't really have this band back because they're just not really good to work with. And the flip side to that as well is, if you're nice and you're personable and you work with people and you listen to what's going on, they'll have you back time and time again. Because it's like, why the fuck will we not work with someone who's fucking great? You know what I mean? Why would we not do that? So I think the strategy, if you will, or the kind of the, you know, the outlook that you have is totally right. You know, and you must have found that. You must have found that the nicer you were to people and how you were shaking people's hands and talking to people, that must have been reciprocated, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we had some lovely chats with a load of different people. A lot of them on the Friday that we played. I mean, we had to be introduced to a lot of people very quickly during the whole setup phase and stuff like that. But when we got down there, we just did exactly what we were told to do, waited where we needed to be, and then tried to just do everything as efficiently and nice as possible. Because we've set up shows before, like on a much smaller scale. We know how much of a stress, even at our level, it can be to do. And then afterwards, you know, they set up, a lot of them were saying, oh, nice one for, you know, being professional about it. We ended up getting talking to a few of the guys in the crew. And funny enough, as he said about negative impressions, a few of them had been saying, oh, we've had bands in the past where, oh, God. I mean, obviously, not going to name any names, obviously. But
sure.
we were happy that we managed to seemingly make a good impression and conduct ourselves well on a bigger stage than what we were used to.
Yeah. And it's hard, isn't it? Because, you know, especially in the metal world, you want to be this screaming fucking against the fucking system, fucking aggressive metal band and stuff like that. And we're saying, no, 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 you should say please and thank you. But it's not really that. It's yeah. more just, you should just respect someone else's shit. You know what I mean? Respect that, like, these guys are going to see maybe 12 or 15 bands pass before them. Do you know what I mean? And it's hard for them. It's a hard fucking job. I often remember, I won't say the festival, I won't say the person, but it was a very big festival. And it's the person who runs the stage at this festival, a wonderful guy who's been doing it a long time. And I was passing through with a band, and we'd, the band were into getting photos of the, you know, when the people sit at the front of the stage and you get the photo of the crowd and everything. They love that. And they always used to get that at the end of the set. And the set was going on and we got to the end and they were like, Coop, quick, get this picture before we finish up. And I got the picture. And as it come off, the guy who was running the stage, he was like, oh, that's put us two and a half minutes over. And I, at first, I was like, what? Oh, and I was all, I'm really sorry about that. He said, it's okay, Coop. I'll catch you next time. We'll sort out the next time. Fast forward 3 years later, same big festival, 3 years later, just about to head on with the band I'm working with then. And he turns around to me and he goes, Coop, you have to lose a song at the end. And I was like, what? He goes, you have to lose one song. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, you owe me 2.5 minutes, mate. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, okay. Scratch that one song, lads. We've got to get off a little bit earlier. He remembered that it was a fucking, it was like 2.5, 3 minutes, it took him over. That clock on the side of the wall, at the side of the stage, ladies and gentlemen, is fucking real. It is real. But yeah, so it's, I think, you know, that approach is something that, I mean, certainly would suggest to bands that haven't, have never played the larger scene before. And it probably would then feed back into the shows that you play now and the shows that you run. I'm sure you learned quite a few lessons and were like, okay, I see. So you take all that professionality and you bring it to the local venue as well. Did you find that happened?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's in the local scene and stuff. I think we've played enough shows that we now know how to conduct ourselves and how it all runs and try and be the best well-oiled machine that we can. Like, get onto stage, get everything set up, no messing around. Just try to accommodate everyone and be as polite and as welcoming as you can. You don't know what other people have, what other previous like sort of ideas they've got going on. And it was the same for Bloodstock. When we got there, it was like, as soon as that other band got off stage, we were like, okay, get everything on. Just get ready as quick as we can. You know, when someone turns around and goes, oh, I'll give you a hand, it's like, what? You know, it's like, we're not used to that, having someone else there who's there to do, you know, you a service, like the tech, you know, and help us out setting up. We were there set up 5 minutes before we were meant to start. It's like we were scared that we were going to take too long, you know. And but that, I think the whole idea of you doing it yourself in the local scene is, it's then, it's not wasted on you, that the job that you have to do is yours, that you have a thing to deliver when you get there and when you go to a show. Like, so we've said before, like time and time again and stuff, like we don't want to half ass anything. And it's the same for every single show on a local scale and a bigger scale. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's ladies and gentlemen, when we talk about these shows and I do these previews for these various shows, this is what I'm talking about when I say there's an enormous amount of work that goes into these shows. This is every Friday, Saturday nights, wherever you are based in, whatever country you're based in, there will be a band doing this, working their arse off and putting together a show for you to enjoy. You know, people are like, why is the ticket this price? And why is this? That's the reason. It's because there's work that goes behind this. And going and playing something like Bloodstock will kind of just start to sharpen the sword, so to speak. So when you go and play the bigger festivals again, which you will do, lads, you will most definitely be playing the festivals again. You can now go, okay, we understand now. Okay, let's keep going. And then you'll have your own show, because you'll, like, for example, this show, 6th of October on Friday, this is your show that you're effectively running. Eventually, you'll start moving up the bill of a touring band, and eventually it'll be your tour. And this, all the stuff that you're learning now and all the stuff that you're seeing, is you gradually moving up the ladder in scale. So when you play a massive festival and it's a ridiculous amount of people there and you're headlining, all the stuff that you've learned will be the payoff for it then. That's why bands, when they first headline a show, when they first headline Bloodstock or something like that, that's one of their moments. They all started in the same position that you did and all made it with the same attitude you have.
I think one of the biggest walkaways that we had from Bloodstock was we said, as soon as we got home, that first practice is we all gained a massive amount of respect for those other bands. You know, when you see a big band and you haven't really gigged much or you haven't been in that situation, you look at that and you think, oh, they're well taken care of. They've got it good up there on their nice big stage. But when you're there, you realize how much work actually goes into it. And when you see a band play so well on a big stage like that and everything goes perfectly, I think now, even though we knew before, there's a lot of effort that goes into that, they're clearly on top of their game. Now it's even more important. It's even more relevant to us, just how much effort they're putting in to be that good consistently all the time, to be that cool headed on stage. And it's their craft is really something that we would only dream of getting to, you know?
Well, it's the double-edged sword I often talk about, especially if you've been touring a long time or you've been worked a lot of shows where it's like I'm a guitar player, so I'll put it from this perspective, is that when I see a guitar player on stage, there's a tiny part of me at the very beginning that is judging their gear, judging their amps, how high they've got the fucking strap on the guitar, everything. And if they're really good, I forget about that. That's how I know a band's good. If I forget about things like that, and what you'll have picked up, especially playing the bigger shows now, is that you'll watch a show and go, oh, well, why the fuck have they put the monitors there? You know, you'll see all that and you'll be like, oh, fuck. But when it's really good, so you see Metallica playing in the round or playing in the theater, you go, that's so good because the work that must be involved to do that. I understand why it's fucking £150, £100 a ticket. I get it now. I understand that. It's a bit of a double-edged sword. When it's done well, you forget all the stuff that you've seen. But also, similarly, if it's done badly, you're like, oh, God, what have they done there? What are they doing with that there? Why is that position there? Or the bands are running 10 minutes late. Fucking hell, I know what problems that causes backstage. You see all of that. It's a blessing and a curse. I know it's a good gig when I forget all that and I just listen to the band and I'm like, okay, this is great. That's how we know. But, I mean, listen, there's a bunch of stuff we've got to get to. But as always, I do like to take a little bit of a trip back. So, for me, gents, when was the first kind of time you hear music then? And to hear kind of heavy music yourselves? When's that happened for each of you?
Well, I've pretty much always been raised on it from my dad. You know, since I was young, it'd be like just Motorhead, Sabbath, just on constantly. So I was just kind of like completely raised on that. And then when I started getting a little bit older, I had my own little hi-fi in my bedroom. I used to go downstairs and just my dad had this massive CD collection and I'd just take a CD, I'd look at the front cover and go, that looks cool. And I'd put it on and I'd just see if I liked it. And if I liked it, I'd keep it in my room. And then the next day I'd go and get another CD and I'd just discover bands like that. And then obviously once you start getting into onto the internet and you've just got this massive world of music to find, you start finding little things that it makes your own taste. So that was it for me.
Shout out to Joe's dad. Because I've seen him at the shows all the time. He comes to all the shows and he's an absolute legend. He really is. And he gives Joe the almost impossible childhood, because what you're meant to do is you're meant to rebel against your parents, right? And you're meant to rebel by listening to metal and Motorhead and stuff and rebel. But he's already listening to that. So what the fuck is he going to do to rebel? He's going to have to go to jazz or something. I don't know what the fuck he's going to do to rebel there, you know? But yeah, it's cool that you're your dad's, you know, I was talking to Joe's old man at the last show. He's he's got such a good taste in music. It's ridiculous. So did you ever find Joe, though? Did you wait to find the band that was yours? Not necessarily your dad's, but yours. You know, you kind of, this is my band. It's not your dad's band. He maybe didn't like it so much, but these were my guys. Was there someone like that?
Yeah, more when I started, I was a teenager and I was finding my own music through just going down like rabbit holes on YouTube and like recommendations on like Spotify and stuff like that. There'd be some bands that I'd be like, oh, this is a really cool band. I'd put it on. My dad would be like, who's this? This is shit. This Joe. I'd be like, no, this is good. But like, it's I'd say it's actually probably quite rare that we disagree on music, you know, which is quite a lucky thing, really, because yeah, there's not always something goes on in the house or in the car.
What about yourself then, Elliot?
Well, music's some of my earliest memories as well. I mean, the one my folks always tell me is when I was a baby, to make me stop crying, they play Hell's Bells by AC/DC, and that was the one thing that worked. But as I say, I remember like it was more like eighties rock. My old man's dead into like, you know, his Def Leppards and Toto's and all that, and the Beatles in the '60s and Aerosmith. So I remember dancing around as a kid, as a very little child, to that. So and I'd listened to like bits of music growing up. I mean, I was always encouraged to play music and listen to music, and I'm always thankful for that. But I remember when I was getting into secondary school, me and my mates were sending me, but this was like Bluetooth was first becoming a thing. My mates would send me songs on Bluetooth, and then my mate got me into Muse at that age. And I remember like going through, getting really into Muse, and I heard this one song, and for me at that time, it was the heaviest thing I'd ever heard, and I was like, whoa. This sounds hard. I want to find harder stuff. And then again, my dad brought home a CD of instrumental guitar player called John Five. He puts that on. I was like, this is the heaviest thing I've ever heard. And then from there, like in recent years, I've kind of branched out a bit more into like other stuff. But like for a long time, I was like, I need to find stuff that's faster, harder, heavier. Just because I just love immersing myself in different scenes, just finding new stuff all the time. It's a real hobby.
That's one of the things I think that every young metalhead does. The first thing they find is like, what's the fastest? What's the heaviest? What's the most disgusting? Or what's the stuff that they're talking about is terrible, is awful? What's the most depressive? What's the most kind of thing, you know? Because
all that stuff.
Yeah, because at that time when you're a teenager, that's kind of your world, isn't it? You're like, fuck everybody. No one understands me. I am the enigma. You know, it's like it's all that type of thing. So you're looking for that refuge, you know, and kind of that solace in that stuff. I was the same. You know, you just the music when I was listening to it, I would constantly go, there's got to be something heavy, or it was a game, or like pretty much like you and your friends, Elliot, where it's like you think that's heavy. Listen to this. I used to have this one-upmanship all the time. What about yourself then, Dylan?
It did start with my parents. I think my dad, he doesn't listen to metal much, but when I was young, I would always hear bands like Foo Fighters and grunge, like bands in general, which have an element of metal to them in general. So I got like my bread and butter through that. And then as I got older and started to explore music for myself and also started to play guitar, that's where it like really came in. When I started to pay attention to what was going on in music and what I liked and sort of steered me in certain ways. Like, my parents don't bother with metal. I had a few friends that bothered with metal, but not much. Like, the whole thing of going back and forth for the heaviest songs ended quite early for me when the others went, no, I don't want that. And I went, okay, I've, you know, tapped into something good, you know, and like you were saying, with something faster or something heavier, I feel like I got to a certain age and went the other way. I went, I want something slower. And I went down the rabbit hole of like doom metal and sludge metal. And that's where I found like the heaviest thing for me. Like at a certain point, I found the band like Mastodon and Baroness. And for ages, that was just like that sort of music was what I chased and what I wanted. And then at a certain point, that changed again. And I just started listening to as much heavy shit as I could find. Like, you know, I'm in a thrash band, so I can't say that sludge is the best genre or anything like that. But really, like, I just hit a point where I was like, anything heavy, all these different genres and styles are just like great. That's not to say like metal is the only great genre, but it's one of the best, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, yeah, it's like this comes up a lot, that, you know, the within the sphere of metal, there's way more diversity than there is probably in any other form of music. Like with metalheads, by sort of definition, are constantly looking for the next thing. what's a band doing now? Oh, they've mixed this with this. What? Oh, they've done this with this. And they've everything. Same thing is like, what's the next thing? It's constantly plying to find what the next sort of permutation of metal can be. You know, what? How can we do something with it that makes it interesting? You know, be it like you say, okay, well, we'll be Judas Priest in the 70s and 80s, so we'll just go faster. Okay, well, we'll be Slayer in the early 80s, and we'll just go faster again. Okay, well, we can't go any faster than this. What do we do? I know, let's go fucking slower. Well, we had Sabbath in the 70s. We'll do it really slow, and then we kind of get, like, the later on, a whole bunch of doom acts getting out. And it's like, okay, what can we do? Okay, well, we can talk and put much longer songs. Okay, we'll do black metal, and we'll do symphonic metal, and we'll kind of, and it just explodes into this wonderful thing. And I think that what metalheads tend to have is they tend to have their band or their group of bands that they're really, really into, but they'll also have an ear ready for new stuff, where they'll be like, okay, you know, what's interesting out there? What's the next thing everybody's talking about within the scene I need to hear? And that's an openness. Maybe I don't think people who are not into metal don't really understand that it's not a closed world at all. It's that we're ready to go. Okay, what are you mixing with metal today? I'm in. What are we doing? You know, and I think that that's probably the reason why it is literally the greatest genre of music ever existed.
Agreed.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, yeah, as you say, it's all to do with like the way it all flows together. And it's amazing how, I'd say, it's so diverse, and people who come from different kinds of backgrounds in metal can find something in the middle. Like, I mean, growing up, I think the three of us are probably into very different. I mean, Joe's very into thrash, Dylan very into sludge. I came through black metal mostly. We've all kind of converged, like, you know, thrashy hardcore stuff together. Yeah. As like a common focal point that we all love. So there's so much diversity that you can all get involved with together.
Yeah, it's this whole thing of, like, you know, we'll have our little battles between us. You know, the sludge guys and the death guys, maybe. We'll take the mickey out of the hair guys or whatever. And that happens, and, you know, and it's a little bit. But the minute a real enemy shows up, like somebody that wants to say that rock and roll is dead and metal's dead, there's like this fucking massive Lord of the Rings style fucking three armies come together. And they're like, no, we're all metal. We're facing this thing. We all fight together, like, you know, and I love that. I think it's a power. Like, the bands that are playing on this show that you've got coming up on Friday, it's like they're not all the same.
Not at all.
You know, but they all sit beautifully together because the war in this case is a really, really good show. You know, so they all sit together. Junta's not the same as Ogun. You know, Reclaim's not the same as yourself. It's not the same, but under the same umbrella, metal, it works, right?
Yeah, that's the one. Heavy music. I think there's just a lot of unity. Like, it's something I love about big festival bills as well, is that every band on that bill isn't necessarily for me. There's bands I'm not going to be into, which I think's beautiful because it covers the whole spectrum of everything that everyone's going to want to watch.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, I think people very early on got wise up to that if you have a bill of the same thing, there's a lot of fatigue halfway through that just sets in. You know, we've took a lot, certainly Bloodstock have took a lot, I think, from the European festivals, where there could be one band that's like this and then the next band on is completely different. And it's okay. That's cool. You know, it's that nice variety. You don't want a meal of the same thing. It's nice to break it up. That's why meals are that way, you know, to make it interesting and have an ebb and a flow. So I want to talk about kind of first bands a little bit. This band is not the first band for all three of you, is it not?
No.
Well,
it's my first band.
It's Joe's first band. Yeah. Joe's kept it going. And won the first time.
Hopefully, yeah.
What about you then, Elliot? First bands?
Second proper bands. Okay. Yeah, I was in like a more of a alternative rock, post grungy, pop punky kind of bands going through like high school into the start of uni. Still great mates with them. Chris from Monkey Trick and Rivia was in that band with me, actually. And love the guy, get on with him really well. Don't see him as much as I should, but we have a great time whenever we do. And then that band fell apart when I was about 18, 19, and then we got a message off Joe saying, hey, do you want to play bass with this band? Yeah.
Simple as that. What about yourself, Dylan?
I had like the opposite run of Joe. I've been in loads of different bands, loads of different projects, loads of different iterations of whatever. Like, first band for me, it was just like some weird combination of metal, like emo, alt rock, whatever. And then slowly worked my way through finding different people and different things. For a while, I was like, I have my other band going, and I've been in that for a long time, but it's been through so many different lineup changes, so many different things. Like, I've been in a lot of bands. I've played like bass for a good while. I was just a bassist, and then the last few years, it's just been guitar again. But I've had a fair few different experiences in terms of playing in a band till I got to, you know, this.
The sort of the first times you guys sort of play together then? Was it quickly like, this is right, this makes sense, this works? Was it a little bit of time? How long did it take? You know, what was it? Did it take a live show to kind of realize where you were at?
From my perspective, it was weird. Because I think yous were a bit hesitant to get me in at first. You were going back and forth.
We've never had this conversation before.
Another guitarist is needed.
When Elliot was joining, you know, we needed a bassist, and we had played with Elliot's previous band, and like, me and Elliot had got along really well at that show, and so as soon as I seen that they had finished as a band, I was like, holy shit, we need to get this guy. So I straight away just gave Elliot a message and said, oh, come down for a jam, and just we'll see what happens or whatever. And like, straight away it was like, yeah, this is just like spot on. And then we done another rehearsal, and like at that rehearsal, I was just like, oh yeah, like if you want to join us, we'd like love to have you. And it was like, yeah, sure. So that was easy, just like spot on. When we always liked the fact that we were a three piece, and because we felt like we've always had a little bit more of like a sort of like punky kind of roots to like the metal we play, and the fact that it was like a three piece, like the one guitar or whatever, that always like was something that we quite liked. But then I met Dylan. We had played with his other band, Wistmother, like a bunch of times, and I'd known who he was for a while. And then we started uni together, or was on the same course, so we became like really good mates straight away. And I was working on like some new songs, and I was thinking this could really go well with like some lead sections on it. And I was like recording it, and I was recording lead sections. I was thinking, yeah, I really like this, but like obviously I can't do this live. And like Dylan was just there, and I was like, the man can sing, the man can play lead guitar. And I was thinking, this is a little bit of a no-brainer. But then a little bit of me was like, we've got a really good thing going. Do we want to mess with it? But then I think I just spoke to Dylan about it. It was just like straight up, like, listen, like I've been like messing about with some new material, and like I feel I want to experiment with having another guitar. Like, would you come down and just have a jam like with the band? And he was like, yeah, of course, because like we were mates. And he came down like straight away. I think we all knew like, yeah, this is like taking us up a level. So I think he came down a second time, and then I just said to Dylan, like, listen, like this is on the boss. We've all had a little chat about it beforehand, and like if you'd be up for like joining us, like that would be absolutely sick. We'd love to have you. And he was all for it, thankfully. And I think since then the band's took like almost a completely different direction. Not necessarily in the music we play. The music we play is still very Devil's Henchmen, and I don't think our sounds change much. But it was down to like I'd always like write the riffs and bring it into like Elliot and Danny, and then like we'd have a little bit of a mess about. But you know, in terms of how the band run, it was like I pretty much write a song, we come and pick it apart in a rehearsal, and that'll be it. But now there's not a single song on this new album that like I haven't written parts on of one of Dylan's songs, and Dylan hasn't put parts on one of my songs. You know, every single song, I think there's seven songs where it's a complete 50-50 effort of we've sat down and we've written the songs together, and that's even down to the lyrics. That was something I was always a little bit like sort of nervous to share, because it was like lyrics is a personal thing, and I'd always written lyrics by myself. And so like when Dylan came in and like he was writing riffs and that was going well, I was like, what about lyrics? Why don't we have a little look at lyrics? And the first song, like Dylan wrote some lyrics for, we wrote it, like just sat there together, and it just clicked so well. Like the Dylan's lyric content's like slightly different to mine, but it crosses over and meets in the middle in this like really nice way. seen with our songwriting as a whole, to be honest. And I think this new album, although it is like still very Devil's Henchman, you can hear the slight difference of Dylan coming in. And even like if you listen to the lyrics compared to old lyrics, it's all stepped up a level. And like that has all happened kind of since Dylan's came in the band. It's stuck on a whole new dynamic. And like it was a very good decision asking him in the end.
I agree.
Do you want to come and jam the Netflix and chill of bands?
Yes, yeah, it is. I was thinking that when we were doing it. It's like we all know what's
come
going
and
on.
Jam
here.
And we'll see what happens.
Well, we don't want to say like, "Oh, come for a trial," because then if you decide you don't like them, it seems a bit awkward.
Well, it seems a bit big for your boots. Say, "Yo, do you want to try out for my band as well?"
That's the thing. Like when I asked Elliot to join, and then like when we asked Dylan, it's like, it's not like, "All right, join my band." It's like they've got to agree to that as well.
So I suppose the obvious sort of question we have to ask here is like, what was that like for you then, Dylan? So we've heard Joe's side. What was it? You coming in and going, "Okay, going to give these guys a whirl. I've been in quite a few bands, you know, there's been things going on. Let's see what happens here." What was your take on it?
Well, I mean, like Joe said, I played with henchmen before, like, you know, as a, you know, just a witnesser of them playing, and I knew what they were like. I knew what vibe of music they played. I've been in thrash bands before. I knew I could play that sort of stuff, but I didn't. You never really know when you go into a band what that dynamic's going to be like. I feel like every single one is different and it has its own thing. But when Joe, you know, turned around to me in the Swan and was like, put on his charm and was like, "Oh, you want to maybe come down for a jam at some point?" It was like, "Yeah, I see what's happening."
Put his arm on his shoulder.
Yeah. The point that made me laugh is like, we were talking, I said to Don, "So I'm looking for I kind of want someone who can do like lead guitar and stuff," and Dylan, maybe someone that like can do like some backing vocals as well. And I was thinking, are you trying to sell yourself to me, or am I trying to sell myself to you?
It's like, what sort of backing vocals do you want? Do you want like singy ones, or maybe it needs like shouty ones? I think shouty ones would be good, you know. Yeah. I know someone who can do that.
I know a man.
I'll give him a ring.
Soon was it before we got the EP, Built by Hate? How soon from that initial meeting and those jams was it we got that?
That was pre-Dylan.
Yeah, Built by Hate was before Dylan.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was just before COVID hit. Our launch show was actually booked the weekend that we went into the lockdown. So our launch got cancelled and it was that weekend, which is gutting. But like that was kind of like Built by Hate. We had done a couple of EPs and it was like really finding our sound. And we were a young band as well. Like our first EP, I was 14 when that got recorded. Second one, I was 15. Built by Hate was like a little bit, I think it was like 17 or something like that. So we had a bit of time to find our sound and mature and whatever. And that was kind of the first EP of like, okay, this is what we are. This is Devil's Henchman. And then, you know, the next EP that we brought out was just a re-recording of some of the old songs, because them old songs, we were still playing a bunch of them live. But obviously, like I was saying, they recorded when I was like 14, so like my voice and everything is very different. So we just had like a little project to fill in the gap between doing the album, just re-recorded four old songs and put them out there. So these songs now that you like Grimace is the first song released with Dylan on it, and the first song released in the last like 3 years, that's new. So it's like this album, you know, we kind of done a bit of a risky move of like not putting another EP out, not putting a few singles out. We just went straight for the album. That's obviously left a bit of gap in the middle. And now it's like there hasn't been much new music out. But I think when everyone hears this album, they're kind of going to know why. Because I think it's a massive step up from previous stuff.
Yeah. I think it was a test with that old stuff. Because like when I joined the band, I never felt like, "Oh, I should just play what Joe's playing on these old songs just for the sake of it." That wasn't really what Joe wanted. It wasn't what Elliot wanted, like, in the band. They wanted to add a new thing. So I sort of had the job of taking these old songs and trying to interpret my own style on top of it while still keeping it sounding like Devil's Henchman. And it so happened that clash of styles worked quite well. And when we went and re-recorded those old songs and brought out like a new EP, those four songs, my parts are all over that, and you can hear it. I mean, it's still the same songs. It's still Devil's Henchman. It's just a bit of an extra thing which is added on. And I think when you hear that like progression from EP, re-recorded songs, and then the album, I think it makes sense. Even though those songs are wholly written by Joe and the input of Danny and Elliot is all over them, it changes. Like I think it's a clear progression going up to the album.
Definitely. Yeah, I would say, I mean, well let's get into the new album. You know, it's a quantum leap of a change. Anybody that heard Grimace, the first single, will you know, you don't need me to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that was, you know, that's a quantum leap to what you're doing now. It's confident, it's assured, it's a band who are clearly, you know, on the same page and know what they want and know what they are as well. And that's incredibly powerful stuff that, you know, was why Grimace first? I mean, it seems pretty obvious because it's listening to the whole album. It's very symptomatic of the whole album, but it's you know, why Grimace? Why that won't be the first?
I do. We cool. Yeah, it was just cool. Like, yeah. You know, like, that was that for me anyway. I think the lads agree. It's like it's probably the fastest song, probably the heaviest song. Yeah. So it's in your face. You know, bringing this album out for us is such a massive statement that it's like, we wanted that single to drop and people to go, holy shit, like this is what they've been doing. And like, this is kind of what we've been witnessing live now. And yeah, we just wanted a big smack in the face, basically, with Grimace. And that's exactly why it was the first single. And that's why it's the first song on the album as well.
Yeah.
Because I want people to put that CD on and go, oh shit, these guys aren't messing about.
Yeah.
I think we sort of saw it while writing as well, because that song, Grimace, me and Joe wrote in a room, in that room that Joe's in right now, like completely 50-50. We both sat there with guitars and we figured it out together. It was the first song where we thought, okay, we're actually going to sit down and write together. All the lyrics, all the guitars, they were done in that one room with both of us sitting next to each other. And as we were getting through the song, we thought, like, you know, fucking hell, this is a like definitely a smack in the face of a song. And we'd already been thinking about, we'd already wrote most of the album by that point. And we were going, oh, which one of these other songs is going to be the first impression that we give to everyone of what we've been doing the past few years? And then we got to writing Grimace and we were like, this has to be the one. This is like, it's too much of a, like, we've captured some energy here and it's, yeah, you can't waste it like in any way.
That's it. That sort of two punch of Grimace and then Think Like You is like, that's those two almost sit together really well. That's like a really strong, it's like, look, we can play and this is what we're doing and this is what you're going to be hearing. Let's get past this and start be enjoying it. Like, and then to go into, like, I think it's Bite Back's Third, isn't it? Which has got that slightly slower riff in it. That's like classic thrash metal album writing. That is one two punch at the very beginning, slower sort of groovier type of thing, and then back, you know, that's kind of like that's such a strong and confident opener. Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear this album, it'll be one of those where it's difficult to get your breath back. So you're listening, you're like, fucking hell, there's like three riffs in a row here that are fucking absolutely standard fucking thrash quality. You know, they're amazing. Hold on, there's another one. And just before I come on the pod, I said it's like when a kid unloads a fucking load of Lego from a box onto the floor. There's just fucking riffs everywhere on this fucking album. And one, I get sent a lot of stuff to listen to, as you'd imagine, ladies and gentlemen. And there's a bit of trepidation before you hit play with this when Joe sent me it, because I was like, if it's shit, I'm really fucked, because I really like this band. I really like Joe. And I really like what everybody's doing and I really endorse them. And if it's shit, I'm going to have to shut up and not say anything about it. And it took me about 6 seconds to realise that I was in safe ground and I was like, oh, thank fucking God. And it started like, you know, I mean, what have I gone back to listen to the most? Hollow, probably. That's got a great fucking line on that. And so, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to get to hear this album. And as I think we've talked about now, is that you're going to hear a band. This is very much the start of their journey. And, you know, you were saying about like, oh, people are going to realize what we've been doing. There's going to be a whole subset of people that didn't know who the fuck you were, guys. Sorry, they didn't know who you were. And this is going to be the first time they hear you. What's the plans for the album then? Are we looking at maybe, could we tour? Could we get on support? What's the kind of the plan for it?
I mean, well, so we've got the launch show, and you know, that was like, we need a massive show to go in support of that. You know, we've just came off the back end of playing some really like massive gigs for us. You know, unfortunately, we were booked to play with Diamond Head earlier on in the year, and that got postponed. But you know, that was going to be massive, and we played with DRI, then we've done Bloodstock, and that gave us just a taste, and that just made us realize like, this is what we need. This is what, like, so bringing the album out, doing like the launch show. The plans for now is fill this year with as many gigs as we can possibly get, play all these songs live, pick up more people along the way, and next year we're really trying to get on some of these tour support gigs and just reach new audiences, new places. Yeah, that's what we've always been looking to do, but now we've got this album to back us up.
Yeah. It's the, I think, ladies and gentlemen, when you listen to the album, kind of really sort of, it'll be a similar situation as quite a few bands we've seen now. Kind of move the scene moves quickly now, doesn't it? Like, you know, you take someone like Tortured Demon, who are kind of like, you know, young guys, you know, friends of the show, and things are moving really quickly for them because they're really good. And I think that's what you're going to find now, lads. You're going to do, you know, you're going to see that. And I think you're really primed in the right way. When I was in bands, when I was around your age, I didn't have half the access that you guys have to things like, you know, the Metal to the Masses and stuff. And you've really, you know, you've really kind of took that by the horns and really, you know, set yourself up well. I think you should be. You should be able to. I mean, can you do it yet? Can you listen back to the album yourself without not hearing all the bits and pieces? You're like, fuck, that took 2 hours and this didn't work. Can you listen back to it yet? Or are you still in that stage where it's like, I just want other people to hear it now?
I'm at the point where I really just want other people to hear it now. I'm just so excited for everyone to listen to it. But the problem with listening to it is we've mixed it ourselves as well.
Yeah.
And mixing it yourself, it's that added thing of like, you know, you've done something, so you're already like really picky because it's your stuff. But when you've mixed it yourself on top of that, you know, if it sounds that way, it's because of you. And
normally, if you hear a band mix the album themselves, it's something of a red flag where you're like, might not work that. But fortunately, as I've said previously to other people, and I think I've said it on this very show, is that Joe's got the magic ears, ladies and gentlemen, because not only is he fucking a really good player, but he's actually a really good producer as well. And I'm completely jealous that at his very young age, he's been able to separate being a producer and playing and produce his own music. And that was the other thing I was concerned about with this album. I was like, oh, is it going to be too heavy on certain things because he's not leaned into it? And it's not. It's wonderfully produced. It's like, you know, it's kind of like top level production produced. Like, so, you know, and that's going to come across as well because, you know, it's all about the good being able to play together, write great songs and all that, but it can fall at the final hurdle if the guitarist who's produced it just fucking unloads the guitar and it's just all, and you can't hear shit. You know, that isn't the case, ladies and gentlemen, on this as well. So it's the other reason why I think that you're going to see a lot when you listen to this album. You know, we've talked about kind of the guy's journey. We've talked about kind of where they are now. And you know, on this show now, live, I will say that you will be supporting a major, major act this next year and more than likely doing tours.
Well, currently at the minute, shows we've got pencils in for next year. We've got Evile in Liverpool in February.
Yeah, show.
Yeah, massive show. April, we've got Discharge, which is massive as well. And we've got another show which isn't announced yet, which is in Rebellion in June, which is another big show. So, you know, three gigs we've got pencils in next year. Is
massive ones,
tour
massive
supports, and that's just brilliant. We're seeing a little bit of the hard work being paid off a little bit, and we just need to prove
it's hard. Yeah, you know, a lot of bands to play Bloodstock and think that is their crowning moments of their career, and that's it. And the reality is, you know, that that's just the start. You know, it's like, oh, well, what, you got to keep working really hard? Yeah. You, oh, you, well, you got to keep going at it, and you got to keep, it's not just fucking given to you on a plate because you played a big festival. Yeah, you have to fucking keep going. And the game just gets bigger, you know, where it's like, okay, well, we're playing 500 cap venues now. And then it's like, oh, we're playing 10,000 cap venues now. You know, it's like, it's it it works like that, and that sort of outlook and work ethic will only bode you well as you approach these and you get thrown these challenges. Because, you know, the next question you're going to get asked, especially when people hear this album, is when's the next album coming out, and when's the what? Do you know what I mean? It's gonna be like that, because that people want, if something's good, people will want it endlessly, and we'll keep doing that. But it's ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get the Devil's Henchman on again. And because there's so much to talk about, there's so much to cover. This show, it's the 6th of October at EBGB's, you know, an album launch. We didn't even mention the name of the album. The album, the Death Choir, yeah?
Yep.
What I've got to ask the almost basic interview question. What's that about?
I'm going to let Dylan explain this one, because it was a line out of...
Come on, Dylan.
The song "Burn Me" on the album is a line taken from that, which Dylan wrote. So I'm gonna give him the credit for that and let him talk about it.
Let me go off on one.
Yeah.
The Death Choir. I wrote that line and a few others ages and ages ago. That's been like hanging around in my phone notes for ages, just like these 4 or 8 lines, and then. At a certain point, we were going back and forth with the song "Burn Me," just kind of struggling to find what lyrics needed to sit. We'd done some, we wrote other lyrics. Me and Joe had wrote other ones. We'd tried them. It wasn't sticking. The song had a whole other name, a whole like other theme. And then it came to a point where we were sitting down, and I went, "Oh, I've got these. They've been sitting around for ages." And Joe and me liked them. They fit well with the riff. And then we sort of built this like story or a narrative around it. It's one of the only songs that we have which has a bit of a narrative. Burn Me, it's like, how would you describe it, Joe, the general theme?
Well, general theme for Burn Me is it's a story, and we've never written a song with story lyrics before, but it's we're just kind of experimenting, and this worked out quite well. So it's basically whole kind of vibe. It's quite cleverly written, but I'll put it out very basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of got like kind of like about like a person, this guy that is like he's gone insane basically, and he's having this kind of like Jekyll and Hyde moments where like he's doing all these things and he's craving all these things, but then doesn't really know that he's done them things, and the kind of the thing that ends up happening is he ends up killing some people, and he kills his wife as well. And then he finds himself in prison, and he doesn't really know why he's there. He doesn't really know what he's done. And then the guilt of trying to realize what he's done to, why he's done it. And then switching between kind of wanting to do that again and justify like his actions. But then the guilt creeping in when he switched to the other side. And then that kind of carries that theme. And what like his feelings are, what's going on in his head, and then he ends up, he kind of like meets his end, and he gets the electric chair, and that's it's all like that's the storyline, but all the lyrics are like really written around that, and it's like this whole thing that that gets made. You know, if you read the lyrics,
I think we went pretty ambiguous.
Yeah, if you read the lyrics in depth, you probably get that vibe from it. You probably understand that story, but. At a first listen, you probably wouldn't know it was that, because the Deaf Choir has an actual line.
The Deaf, it's, go on, join.
It's like, go on, yeah.
When I originally wrote it wasn't really for that story, but it fit in really nicely with the whole idea of this guy's so conflicted. He's been through a lot. He's been through like justice system and all this. The Deaf Choir is this idea of a large group of people, maybe they could be a jury, maybe they could be anything, but whatever, like, idea of a group of people you want. But a deaf choir, they're singing, they can't hear There's no note there. There's no like tune or harmony. They are making a lot of noise, but they're not taking anything in. The deaf choir sort of takes that like weird, chaotic, vaguely political, if you want to skew it that way. You know, we're a thrash band. You've got to be a bit, you got to play with that idea a little bit. The deaf choir is very much just like social commentary for how a lot of things are happening in the world at the moment and how things do get played out with large groups of people and how, you know, sort of mob mentality is a bit of a thing. It's I'm not pointing to any specific like things, and it's not really written about any specific points in like the public eye or in history. It's just sort of the deaf choir is a bit of a vessel to sort of put towards like a bit more like social commentary views that are like through the record, because there's a few songs that sort of touch on this vague idea, and but Burn Me is very much like that Slayer-y, here is a narrative, we're gonna like sing about this, and it's gonna be really fucking angry, and you know,
there's elements the deaf choir, in there time and again as well. Yeah, there's like there's a very I struggle to say dystopian, but certainly like, you know, an outlook on modern sort of culture on there, which is always important. That, you know, that kind of thrash albums and metal albums should be a mirror to kind of sociological indifference and sociological change. It should be that, you know, and it's one of the things that gets leveled against metal artists that, you know, that were just singing about fucking Lord of the Rings style fucking battles and shit. And it isn't like that. It's, you know, this stuff is current. This stuff is happening now. This stuff is timeless. Like, you know, these are issues that the, you know, political or otherwise, that human beings deal with. And sometimes singing about those helps people understand that maybe that those things are going on that they weren't initially aware of. So yeah, I mean, how many spins have we got the record? 4, probably. I still need to listen to it again, and it's nice to hear. I always like to hear the thing behind the song as well, because it just something sort of sprinkles something on the song that makes it more amenable and easy to digest and listen to. Is the plan to release the album the same day on streaming services as the live show? What's the plan there?
We're going to be releasing the album on Wednesday, October 4th.
Right.
So a couple of days before the launch show. Okay. That announcement's coming out in a couple of days. We've actually, from the time of doing this podcast, tomorrow we're actually releasing our second single, Bite Back. And then exactly a week on from that, we'll be announcing with that single release, the album release, which is the Wednesday before the launch show. So it gives everyone a couple of days to give a little listen to the album. And
I don't know how long the set is. Are we going to get the full album, or what's your plans?
That's I think the plan currently is we play the full album, and we play a couple old songs that we don't really play anymore. You know, just to kind of give back to the people that have been there from the start, and to just show a little bit of like this is everything this is Devil's Henchmen. This is what we are. Kinds of thing. Yeah. This is everything leading up to this point. These are all the songs that we are now. And
I think it's like we said at the head of the show, this feels like a baptism. It feels like a christening. It feels like all those things come together where it's like all the scene are going to show up and be like, you know, look, you're one of our favorite sons, and it's nice to get round everybody and see an album. We just want everybody else to hear what we fucking already know. You know, ladies and gentlemen, what do we already know? We already know that on the 6th of October, we're going to get to see fucking the Devil's Henchmen play their headline show in Liverpool, EBGB's, with Ogun, Reclaim and Junta. We get to hear the album 2 days before. It's a good week next week. I'm looking forward to next week. You get the album we get to hear as well. And I can start really talking with people about which songs they like, because it gets dropped then. Ladies and gentlemen, it's what a wonderful band and a wonderful journey they become and on and are going to go forward from. It's the Devil's Henchmen. Thanks for coming on the show, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Coop.
Nice. Yeah, thank you.
Big pleasure. There we go. Let me just there we go. And there we go.